Routledge Reel 2. Apart from your active service with the air battery, the Z battery on Teesside, did you see any other active service in Britain?
No, no. It was from Scotland. I was drafted down to Woolwich in London to Woolwich Arsenal. That was where you went there for to be kitted out for going abroad. Once you got down to Woolwich, you knew then within a few weeks you were going to be sailing off, you see. Now this was towards end of 1942, I think. No, it would be in 42 probably, middle of 42, because we went into Burma in 43, that's right. I think we're still into 42. So you can tell then the service I was having then was coming to a close on these guns, you see. So I wasn't there for years, it was just a matter of months, you see. And of course, we come down to Woolwich. As soon as we got to Woolwich, we were kitted out with all the tropical gear. We knew as soon as we were kitted out with tropical gear, we were gone somewhere abroad, either to India, Egypt, or wherever, you see. Anyway, once we got to Woolwich, they sent us on a fortnight's leave home. That was the last leave you were going to get for the time being. And where we went on leave for a fortnight, had to report back. As soon as we got back, they were giving us some rigorous training on the Woolwich Square. In between training, we had to do work in the arsenal and go pick up all the empty shells that were firing, practicing with, in the arsenal. As much lead as we could pick up from the shells and that they were practicing with, we didn't pick them up until the firing was all finished and then we were sent in. And in this arsenal there was loads of civilian workers, you know, in the arsenal, but they used to send us in just to clean up all the ranges, where the firing ranges in there, where they practiced the guns and that. And then of course it wasn't long before they called us all together one night up in Woolwich. I can't really tell you exactly the dates again. It was still into 1941, 42, that's right, 42. And we were told to be ready at a minute's notice to move, you see. All our kit was all ready and everything. And then suddenly we got the orders, we were moving out. When we moved out of Woolwich one night, round about midnight, they were marching us down the Woolwich streets, clitter-clatter, midnight, right down to Woolwich railway station. Well, of course, we got on the trains, piled us all onto the trains, as many as I could get on those three or four train loads, I should think. And everything was mum. You just herded like cattle into these here railway trains. The blinds was all drawn on the carriages. We didn't know where the devil we were going. All we knew, we were getting on these trains, and we knew we were going somewhere, whether it was to a dock area or where. But anyway, we got on these trains. We started off chunking off around about 1 o'clock in the morning after got loaded up. All through the night, we were chunking away along the tracks, you know. Next morning, when it broke daylight, we suddenly found ourselves in Liverpool docks. So we had travelled from Woolwich, right across country, to Liverpool. So these trains went right into the Liverpool docks, you know, and there you were stuck until they give you the command to come out. Well, anyway, an hour or two went past, and when we got into the docks, of course, naturally, we hooked the blinds and everything, thought, well, where the hell are we? Well, some lads knew we were at Liverpool, but myself, I thought, well, we're in some dock area somewhere, but I wasn't quite sure it was Liverpool. Nobody did for sure, because there was no name signifying where you were, you know, they weren't letting anybody know where you were. Anyway, next thing we see was about five or six troop ships all lined up, right we were actually looking out of our carriages, and they then loaded us aboard them. We all went piling in like ants going in there. I never see so many thousand men going up them ramps in you know. We were going in there like flies. And I'll tell you what, I went on to the Britannic. The Britannic was the troop ship that I went on, and believe it or not, there's 5,000 of us trooped on that one ship. And that was just one. So you tell the rest of the ships that was there must have been about the same amount on, you know. And we clambered on these boats, and as you went on, you were given a deck card, which deck you were on, and everything, you know, card for this and a card for that, and then you had to find your way down to where you were. I looked at mine, I thought, D deck, where's that? That's right down the damp bottom below the waterline, where the engines were, you know. So we took down there, right from the blooming top, went down steps, it was like going down a blooming coal mine, going down into there, you know what I mean? You tell the size of them. And we got down there and found our deck. We stayed on there, I should think, all that day. And then we stayed on 2 days. We thought, well, what they were doing. Well, next thing, we heard them lifting anchors and we started to move. We thought, hello, we're on our way. Well, it took us about 3 miles out to sea and then anchors down again. That's where we stuck again for about 3 days. You see? Until the convoy got assembled. We could see what they were doing, finally. They were assembling this convoy, ready to go, you see. As fast as they were loading up, they were taking them 3 miles out, anchoring down, and waiting. Well, once they got, I think there was a convoy of about, well, it must have been about 50 or 60 troopers there then, all dotted about. And there was, what they call them,
escorts.
Taking up the positions and flying around all the sides of them. And finally we got sailing about 3 days after. We got sailing. Didn't know where we were going. They didn't tell you where you were going. We just sailed out and away we went. When we got, must have been a month. A couple of months, I should think, on the water, because you didn't just take a straight course. You went out a few miles. Then to come back, you were zigzagging all the way in this convoy, you see, to stop the German submarines from catching you out. You know what I mean? You'd go out one way, and next thing you found yourself going another way, sort of thing. To you, or to me, you were still going in a straight line, if you know what I mean. But this went on and on and on for all ages. We called into Cape Town. In South Africa, they all took us off the ships at South Africa, Cape Town, marched us all up, marched us onto trains again, got on troopers again, and they took us right outside Cape Town to a blooming great big, what we thought was a big prison camp, you see. It looked like a prison camp. And of course, we get out there then, and where we went to this camp. Well, we had about 3 or 4 weeks there. We were in a marvellous old time, you know. They were letting us out every day into Cape Town. And we kept thinking, well, cool, we're having a nice time here. You can go out any time you wanted. You had to be back in at midnight at night. But there was only one thing. You weren't allowed to go on your own. You weren't there being groups, you see, the soldiers. Well, we wondered why we were there so long. Well, what we were waiting for was another damn convoy coming to join us again, you see, or us to join them, and which they did. After about 12 weeks, this convoy come again into Cape Town. No, they didn't. They took us from Cape Town then on the trains to Durban by rail again, which took another couple of days from Cape Town to Durban. When we got to Durban, there's where the ships was waiting, at Durban, you see. So we come at Cape Town, then went to Durban, then we got on these troopers at Durban again, I can also remember it well because we were going down the main streets of Durban, the big wide streets, all marching down there with fixed bayonets, you know, like to proper like, you know. And the crowds were cheering us as we were going down there. They were giving us oranges, bananas and all sorts of things, and away we went. And off we get troops on these troopers again. Well, that was the last time we saw of Africa. So then we off we sail again. By this time we were only at about half a convoy. What happened to the other half of the convoy that we had, I don't know. Must have gone to Egypt or somewhere like that. But we went off, and away we went again, and we finished up coming into India. When we finally found out where we were going, they didn't tell us till we were nearly there, that we were arriving in India. We went into Bombay then, sailed into Bombay, and that was our final destination for the time being. And of course, from there, Bombay, we were loaded into army lorries then, and taken out along all the blim mountainous roads and what have you. These Indian drivers, the erratic blooming drivers, you didn't know whether you were sitting up or sitting or laying down. They were mad, you know what I mean? And we finally finished up at Doolally. And you heard of everybody getting the Doolally tap, haven't you? Well, there is actually a place called Doolally, and that's where we did our jungle training. Now, that's where they started sorting us out for the chinlids. That's how I've come to it. And they started sorting us out for the chinlids. There, where you were going and what you were going to do, you see. Well, because us being gunners, artillery, we didn't have no guns, you see. So what they did, they made us infantry columns, you see. They made everybody into infantry columns. They said you can forget about guns. And weren't that, because where you're going, you can't get guns there in any case, you know, where you're going. And that was that. So we had no guns. We planted off to different companies of infantry. I think I was finished up in the Essex finally. We still had our original badges of the artillery, but you then got a tag put on your shoulder. I finished up in the Essex, 1st Battalion Essex. And then, of course, he was sorted out for what they were going to do with you. They sent us on training in the jungles, and one thing or another. Severe training it was, you can believe me. That was the hardest part about my war service, was the damn training in them jungles. Because what you didn't meet in there was nobody's business. Blooming snakes, blooming spiders, blooming creepy crawlies, every damn thing, leeches and the lot. And they put us in this Shimoga jungle, I'll just remember it. We were still in India, mind you. We were in there for a damn 4 or 5 days. Beaten to the death, nearly, with different damn things, and you couldn't see daylight in it. It was up damn thick. And they reckoned that we would meet. That was the worst thing we would ever meet. The Burma jungles was nothing like that, they said, you know, so they were giving us training there. And of course, after a while, sorted us all out to put us into, they said, well, what we're going to do with you chaps? You were interviewed, you see, and they asked me, I was interviewed by a Cumbrian officer, and he said, I'm a Cumbrian. He said, I come from Workington or somewhere, this officer. He says, how would you like to go with the 51st Cumberland Artillery? I says, I don't mind where I go, you know. He says, right, well, you'll go to the 51st Cumberland Artillery, but it'll be a column, 51st column of artillery. But as I said, you were still infantry, you see. You didn't have no guns, only your rifle, right? And then, of course, after all this training, I was allotted to the 51st column. And then they told you then that the General Wingate was forming these columns to go into the Japanese, behind the Japanese lines, as long-range penetration forces, you see. And we more or less accepted that, which we couldn't do any other, really. And up we went. after we'd done a certain amount of training there, which was very severe, I can tell you that now. I mean, off we went into the jungles.
Did you see Wingate?
Yes, I actually did see Wingate, and the only time I did see him, mind you, was when he landed on the Chinwin, shores of the Chinwin River. And that was the last time I think any of the Chindits saw him, because if you remember rightly, he was killed in the plane crash shortly after his campaign got started in Burma. I don't know if you remember that, because his campaign started in 1943. I think it was round about January or February, somewhere around about then. It was coming up the spring of the year, and his campaign started in Burma, started to go into Burma in 1943. And if you remember rightly, I think Wingate's previous Chindits, they got swamped out of Burma, didn't they? They got a beating, and of course they had to find and make their own way back to India. Well, they said that wouldn't happen again in the next campaign, you know, which it didn't.
What did he look like? What impression did he make?
Well, he looked to me, as I saw him, he looked a scrawny, he wasn't a tall fella, he looked a scrawny looking chap, a massive beard, a battered old, bush hat.
Topi?
Bush hats. We had bush hats then. We didn't have topis. They only used them in Egypt. But in there, they were the Australian bush hats, you see. And that's what Wingate had on them. It was the same as we were. And by the way, we weren't allowed to share now. We started to move into Burma now, you see. And we met him on the Chinwin. That's the only time I met him. We didn't meet him before, but our brigadier, when the column started, our brigadier, I was in the 16th Infantry Brigade. Bernard Ferguson, have you heard of him?
Yes.
Sir Bernard Ferguson, he was our brigadier. And that was the 16th Brigade in Chinwitz. And apparently we... him and I don't know whether it was Calvert or some of them, Mad Mike Calvert or some of them, they all tossed a coin who had to go into Burma by gliders and they had to walk in. Now do you see what I mean? Mind, I was allocated finally to the mules, of all things. You know. And I was a muleteer, finished as a muleteer. To each column there were 64 mules, and there was about, I should think, half a dozen casualty ponies to each column, and two bullocks, and that was made the column.
What's a casualty pony?
Well, there were ponies for carrying casualties. They could put stretchers on either side. They had casualty saddles on, what you'd call a casualty saddle, you see, and they would carry casualties, because if you had any wounded men where we were going, you had to carry them with you, you see, or try and get a light plane in to get them out of Burma. But anyway, that didn't happen a lot to us as far as that went. We did carry one or two casualties. Some of the ponies had chairs on, which was a chair, casualty chair, where you put the wounded man in it, and he was more or less trapped in it, and he couldn't fall out of it. And the rock of the pony, wherever he was climbing up the hills or the mountains, he wouldn't drop out of it, you see what I mean? And of course, all the mules, I was in the muleteers, and I think there was about there was 64 mules altogether. There was so many to each section of the column. Now the column stretched for about a mile long, column snake, by the time he got to the tail to the tip of it, you see, to the head to the tail of it. And I was carrying rough wireless, because attached to the columns, of course, was rough. There was a certain amount of rough lads, two or three, something like that, just for wireless operating, you see. I was carrying the wireless on my mule, and I was carrying what they call the chauros, That's the thing that operates and charges the batteries, you know what I mean? From when you got into the jungle.
The Choros?
The Choros, what they call a Choros. It was a, big mortar, big electric, a big mortar, which you wound it up with a handle, like a starting handle, like a car engine, you know. Carried the wireless on one side, and this here thing to boost the batteries, and to charge the batteries when you come to a stop.
Were you just in charge of one mule?
Yeah, yes. One person had one mule, but there was probably, in my section, there were 64 mules in this column, and mine was carrying wireless. The lad in front of me, his mule, he was probably carrying hand grenades. Another one would probably be carrying the carbine ammunition, which the American carbines was our rifles, short range, you see. You didn't have three rifles, which is a long range rifle. We had the American carbines, you know. We did have the Sten guns at first, but they found out that they were no damn good. If you hit them on the ground with the bullet, the damn bullet used to go off and they were no damn good. So they finally issued us with American carbine rifles. Repeaters, the rounds was about, I don't know, about 15, 20 rounds in them, you know, in the magazine, probably more than that. And of course, you had all your equipment as well to carry. You had 5 days' care rations to carry. American cares, again, rations. And everything. And we started off from India, went right up through into Assam. From Assam, we went into Burma. And we didn't even know where through. And it was all climb from the damn start. Started out of India, and that's how we went. We lost it, our brigadier lost the toss, and of course we were the ones that had to walk in. But unfortunately, the glider force that went in, I think a lot of them were crashed in there, you know, when they cut loose, you know.
Can you tell me about your mule?
My mule, it was called Boxer. Funny name for a mule, wasn't it? Well, the reason it was called Boxer, because when I had it in the mule lines in India, so you had all these mules given to you in India, and you had to be with them the whole while. And they were all trained, these mules, from the remount depots in India before they come to the army, you see. And they all had the War Department stamped on every hoof on the feet. All the saddles and the equipment was all stamped with the War Department doings, and everything was universal, all these harnesses and the carrying, saddles was all army universal style. So whatever you put onto the mule was all universal, it fit, you know. It hooked on the side of the saddle, each side. And you had that to load up every morning, the mule, before you went out. Because before we went on to this year campaign, we had to go out, walk about a mile, exercising them every morning, then again in the afternoon. This was while we were in India at the camps. You had to feed it, groom it, and you had to look after it. It was your personal thing, it was a mule. You looked after it, fed it, groomed it, combed it, curry-combed it, brushed it, and everything. And that was your piece of army equipment while you went into Burma. And as I said, there was quite a number of us muleteers, you know, and we used to go off with them, good little things. Mine was only a South African mule, he was a little one, but by was a good one, you know. And where we used to go, we used to be aware, when we first started, you were aware by early morning, we never bivvied anywhere. You slept where you landed, you know what I mean? I'm probably gone ahead of myself now, really, but still. You were just carried on trekking, and I think the first place until we finally got into the Burma border, over the border into Burma. And it didn't make any difference to you, really, because You didn't see no Japanese. We didn't see no Japanese. You didn't say because we went into Burma border, we were going to jump right into the Japanese. I mean, we were in Burma a heck of a while before you actually come in contact with any Japanese, you know. And the Chinese was to do as much damage as they could, fight as little as they could, if necessary, and just do damage to railway lines or disrupt anything that was in your way, you know what I mean, or in that the Japanese was using. But if it come that you suddenly come on them in surprise, like you probably come on them one time without you realising it, then of course, if you did, I mean, me with a mule couldn't do a lot, but our infantry more or less sorted them out, you see, as long as you took care of your mule, you know, and defended yourself, and your mule, of course, if necessary. And they didn't actually say, well, right, you with your mule get stuck in there, sort of thing, you know. We had all between me and in between my mule and the next mule were so many infantrymen without mules, just carrying the guns and the packs and everything. Then there'd be me with my mule, then be some more infantrymen, you see, and then another mule, you see. There might be about five or six infantrymen in between each mule, all the way down the column, you see, and that's how it worked. And that's, as I said, that's how that worked, and it kept going like that from week in, week out. And our first place we were making for was Lonkin Jade Mines. I always remember that. Some days we were going with the mules, and it was lovely. But we to get into Burma, really, we had to get onto the Lido Road. You've heard of the famous Lido Road. Well, we were 5 days on that, in mud and water, and rain and monsoon. And believe me, I've never known anything like it in my life. We were up to the behind in mud and slush, and the Americans were building that road. Time we were walking along it, you know. It was a new Lido Road they made. And they were all American coloured Negroes that was building that, American servicemen, but they were all blacks built that road. But the rain and the mud, we sloshed along there for about 3 or 4 days before we got off it. But once we got off that road, we did run into a little bit better weather. And of course, then of course we were climbing. Well, you never saw such climbs in all your life. But these poor mules and men had to get up and get through, and as well as that, as well as going through little rivers where you're up to your chest probably, and it was dreadful. You can't believe it. And another day, it was like walking like a summer's day again, you know, and you didn't come across anything. You heard the birds whistling and things going on and that, and the monkeys chuntering, and you would have thought you were in a nice summer's day in England. So.